I want to welcome everybody with us this morning as we gather together on this Lord's Day to worship God together. Glad to have this number with us. We have a number of visitors here. We're grateful for you being with us this morning. We hope that our time together is edifying, uplifting, and most, of course, the most important thing is that it is pleasing in the sight of God as we obey Him according to His Word. We're just saying, yield not to temptation. And in that second verse, it says, shun evil companions, bad language disdain, God's name hold in reverence, nor take it in vain. I want you to imagine with me this morning, someone who claims to his friends and to his co-workers, his classmates, his neighbors, his loved ones, that he is a Christian, he or she is a Christian, and that they believe in the Bible, they believe in the characteristics that God has called on His people to have. But then in their dialogues with others, especially those who aren't Christians, perhaps they use profanity, perhaps they are quick to tell jokes that are inappropriate, perhaps they have no problem in talking about things that or saying things that should not be said by a faithful servant of God. Imagine the example that might have for others around them. Even non-Christians, they know to a degree the standard that Christians hold themselves, or at least that they claim to hold themselves. And they know when a Christian or someone who claims to be a Christian says things that are very worldly, speaks in a way that is not does not have a soundness to it, that is very vulgar, let's say. They know that that's not the way a Christian is supposed to act. And it's important for us to think about the fact that we have been called to a character with regard to our tongue, with regard to what we say. And that characteristic is having our speech seasoned with salt. And the question we want to ask this morning is our speech seasoned with salt? And this has a lot of variations of application. It's not just, a lot of times we think about speech seasoned with salt, that this is just from the aspect of profanity. But you know, this applies in a lot of different areas. Just as our hymnist brings out, God's name hold in reverence, nor take it in vain. Now, I'll never forget, we had a Florida College, we had chapel services every morning. And I remember one morning, Dee Bowman was invited to speak. And Dee was there, and this was the first time I had ever heard anybody from Texas, much less Dee Bowman, speak. And he was up, and his message for the morning, they were always like a 10-minute message for these chapel services. And his message was people saying or taking God's name in vain. And I'll never forget the way he started out. He said, I am sick and tired of hearing Christian people say, oh my God, in a way that is not used in a prayer. Now, I'll never forget that, because it was to me, it was a reference to the idea that sometimes even young people who claim to be Christians get into a habit of what our society views as acceptable by saying, oh my God, or OMG. Even shortening it to OMG, people still know what you're saying. They know what you're talking about. That's still taking God's name and using it in a way that is not right. It is not appropriate. You're not talking to God, and you're not talking to someone else about God. You're using God's name simply as a substitute for the expression of emotion, which ultimately is the definition of profanity. It's very, very much the definition of blasphemy as well. In the Old Testament, Leviticus chapter 24 and in verse 10, Leviticus chapter 24 and in verse 10 says, now the son of an Israelite woman, whose father was an Egyptian, went out among the children of Israel. This Israelite's woman's son and a man of Israel fought each other in the camp. Excuse me. And the Israelite woman's son blasphemed the name of the Lord and cursed. And so they brought him to Moses. Verse 12. They put him in custody, that the mind of the Lord might be shown to them. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, Take outside the camp him who is cursed, and let all who heard him lay their hands on his head, and all the congregation shall stone him. And then you shall speak to the children of Israel, saying, Whoever curses his God shall bear his sin. Whoever blasphemes the name of the Lord shall surely be put to death. All the congregation shall certainly stone him. The stranger as well as him who is born in the land, when he blasphemes the name of the Lord, he shall be put to death. This was the law under Moses. This was the law that God gave regarding his people, that when he takes my name, Yahweh, Jehovah, God, he takes my name and uses it in the midst of cursing. And of course, this cursing, we use the term cursing as synonymous with profanity. In the Old Testament, this idea of cursing was to pronounce a curse or condemnation on another person. And whatever it was this individual said combined the idea of pronouncing condemnation or damnation on this person and association with God that wasn't calling upon God. He was using it simply to express his emotion. And as a result, this condemnation from God was carried down to this woman's son. In Ecclesiastes chapter 10 and in verse 20, Solomon says, Do not curse the king, even in your thoughts. Do not curse the rich, even in your bedroom. For a bird of the air may carry your voice, and a bird in flight may tell the matter. As Solomon offers wisdom, and of course the ultimate expression or understanding of the fact that someone may hear, we know that God hears everything. But part of what this man did, this woman's son in Leviticus, was cursing, and that's the very thing that Solomon deals with. Do not curse the king, do not curse the rich. And the idea of condemnation, the idea of begrudging someone because of their status, their influence, their wealth. All of this combines itself to say and express the understanding for all of us is it's not just about the words that we say or don't say for that matter. It's as much about the character of the individual by saying those words. And that really is what the focus is. When we talk about taking God's name in vain, we talk about profanity, we talk about cursing. All of this, it's not just what they say. It's the purpose with which they say it. When we sing, I'm not going to be able to remember the hymn, but at a certain part in it, we sing, Oh my God, I trust in you. I can't remember the name. Anyway, you'll all tell me because I can't remember. But we sing that part. I had my kids come to me at one point after we sang that song, and it was William or Savannah. I said, oh, we're not supposed to say that. And I said, well, this is a hymn, and we're speaking to God. I mean, it's practically a prayer within this hymn. When we pray to God, dear God in heaven, okay, oh Lord, please be with me. All right, we're talking to God. Well, in this hymn, we're talking to God. We're not using it in a frivolous manner. We're not using it in a way in which we're discarding the name of God as if it means nothing. That's how people of the world use it. In James chapter 3 and in verse 9, in a context in which James is dealing specifically with the prospect of teachers who teach, and then they teach things that are wrong. When we talk about James chapter 3 and we talk about lessons of the tongue, there's a lot of application here. But the specific situation that James, he's taken these broad principles of the dangers of the tongue and then applies it specifically to the danger of teaching things that aren't right. But notice one of the principles he brings up in verse 9. With it, talking about our tongue, we bless our God and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the similitude of God. Out of the same mouth proceeds blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not to be so. Does a spring send forth fresh water and bitter from the same opening? Can a fig tree, my brethren, bear olives or a grapevine bear figs? Thus no spring yields both salt water and fresh. In other words, especially as he sets it to this idea of a fountain or a well, does a spring send forth fresh water and bitter or salt water? A well that is dug that is set to be a freshwater well, water that gives water that is able to be drunk, that is able to be enjoyed. That well, you can't have from it pure water and then salt water. It doesn't work that way. The two are going to mix, and ultimately the salt's going to mix in with the fresh, and it's not going to be able to be drunk. The idea is that we have been designed as Christians, as people of God, to be a blessing. That's what we've been designed to do. We are designed to bless God and to bless those around us. And as James brings out the hypocrisy of what happens if we bless our God and Father, but with the same mouth we curse men. That's not the way it's supposed to be. And ultimately it brings out the hypocrisy. And later in verse 13 starting, he's going to talk about the wisdom of God and the importance of us recognizing the wisdom that is from above and recognizing the need for us to maintain a status and a character that is pleasing to God, one that isn't hypocritical, one that doesn't bear both fresh water and salt water or bitter water. In Matthew chapter 15 and in verse 16, Jesus says, "Are you still without understanding? Do you not understand that whatever enters the mouth goes into the stomach and is eliminated? But those things that proceed out of the mouth come from the heart, and they defile a man. For out of the heart proceed evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornications, thefts, false witness, blasphemies. These are the things that defile a man. But to eat with unwashed hands does not defile a man." When Jesus talks about, and of course there's actions that are sinful when he talks about murders and adulteries, fornications, and thefts. But notice he includes false witnessing. That's telling a lie about someone in order to get them into trouble. Okay? We know everybody from little kids on up can understand what that's about. Okay? Well, I really know who did it or I did it, but I'm going to say so-and-so did it so that they are the one who gets in trouble. Well, adults know this is just as well as anybody else. And this is something that afflicts anybody of any age, the temptation to do it anyway. And then blasphemies. And notice where Jesus says these things come from. These come from evil thoughts. That's where it starts. A character that is not trained, a character that has not submitted to what God wants it to be. This is a mind that is undisciplined. A mind that allows every wind of urges to come about, and it allows the body to be able to submit to those urges. There's no discipline. From these, it starts with the evil thoughts, then comes the sin. And that's why Jesus specifically says these are what defile a man. Because it starts with the character of the person. So let's consider for a minute the fact that we've already talked about Leviticus 24 and Ecclesiastes chapter 10. And these are not the only places, even in going into the New Testament. The idea of taking God's name in vain, cursing or wishing ill will upon another, condemning someone else in a frivolous manner. These are the types of things that are condemned in the New Testament as well. Leviticus 24 and Ecclesiastes chapter 10 are simply convenient references to those sinful things by showing it in action. And the way God, as he addressed it, how he condemned it, that it was worthy of death, taking his name in vain, of cursing this man, and then using God's name apparently in conjunction with cursing this other person. It was worthy of death. But then in Matthew chapter 5, notice how else our words, it's important to recognize the need to restrain and have control over the things that we say. Not just saying, taking God's name in vain, or referring to God in some frivolous way, but also in Matthew chapter 5 and in verse 33, Jesus says, "Again, you have heard that it was said to those of old, you shall not swear falsely, but shall perform your oaths to the Lord." Jesus in Matthew chapter 5, whether he was talking about marriage and divorce as he does, or this as he talks about swearing, he takes what was said of old. Here's the standard that you've held yourselves to under the old law. This is the way it was. You shall not swear falsely. In other words, you if you're going to swear, and of course, swearing, the idea we use a lot of times, we use the term swearing. Usually it's reference to profanity or cursing. But remember the idea of swearing, talk even in our courts today, you know, a lot of times when people take a stand, they put their hand on the Bible, they swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. And that is stronger than a promise. It's like an oath. But keep in mind, in the Old and New Testaments, a man's word had to mean something. Okay, even today, we have contracts, which kind of mean the same thing. I promise to, every time you sign a credit card receipt, if you'll notice what it actually says that you're signing, this is my word that I'm going to pay back what I'm borrowing from my credit card company. That's what you sign when you sign a credit card receipt. Well, in essence, you're saying, this is my word. I am entering into a contractual obligation to pay back the money that I'm borrowing from this company. Well, to say, to swear or to make an oath, it's the same concept, but it carried a contractual sense in the Old and New Testaments. And so in Matthew chapter 5, verse 33, of old it was says, you shall not swear falsely. Make a promise, make an oath, make a vow, and then you have no intention of following up on it. I'm signing my credit card receipt, I'm signing my mortgage, but I have no intention of paying any payments. That's swearing falsely. But you shall perform your oaths to the Lord. What you say, you're going to do. Jesus says in verse 34, but I say to you, here's what was taught under the old law and has been said in the past, but I'm giving you something new. Okay, Jesus is going to take it a step further, just as he did with divorce earlier. He's going to take this a step further in describing here in verse 34, I say to you, do not swear at all, neither by heaven, for it is God's throne, nor by the earth, for it is his footstool, nor by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. Nor shall you swear by your head, because you cannot make one hair white or black. But let your yes be yes, and your no be no. For whatever is more than these is from the evil one. Which is to say, Jesus isn't condemning the idea of entering into a contract with somebody, or having an obligation to repay somebody. The idea that Jesus is bringing out here when he says in verse 34, when a person under the Old or New Testaments would swear, they would swear by a greater power and authority. Okay, today it's used very frivolously. We see it on TV shows, we see it in movies. You know, I swear on the life of my parents. You know, this is what I'm going to do. Okay, what power do you have that carries any type of value to swear upon your parents' life or your children's lives? Okay? When I take out a mortgage, all right, in essence what I'm doing is I'm saying I'm obligated based on my income to pay you back. I'm not swearing on anything that I don't have actual authority to do so. That's why Jesus refers to here in verse 35 and 36, and verse 34, do not swear by heaven. That's God's throne. You can't swear by heaven. You have no authority to do so. You can't swear by the earth or anything in the earth. It's his footstool. You cannot swear by your head. You have no control over whether you can make your hairs turn gray or back to whatever color they were before. You have no power over that. So let your yes be yes and your no be no. Which is to say, again, he's not saying that it's wrong to make a promise. But the importance of recognizing when we say we're going to do something or we enter into an obligation with someone, you be very careful when you do so. Certainly don't go into it swearing by some greater power or authority that carries no value because you have no contribution to that power or authority. You have no ability to swear by heaven or by earth because you have nothing to do with it. And that's what Jesus' point here is. Don't make vows to God, first of all. You know, this vow that, Lord, I'm going to do this, and I promise I'll give you the first thing that comes out of my house. Remember that story from the Old Testament? He's anticipating an animal coming out of his house, but out comes his daughter instead. And he had promised that he would sacrifice whatever it was that came out his door first. And we consider the idea of hypocrisy attached to this. When we considered this example earlier about this individual who claims to be a Christian, but they use profanity, they take God's name in vain, what if they make promises that they either don't intend to keep they enter into obligations to pay and then they don't pay, don't make arrangements to take care of those things. There's another term that we are to be attributed to us, another characteristic attributed to our character: trustworthy, honest. And the idea of hypocrisy in the midst of making promises to people or entering into obligations, we do those things because people are counting us trustworthy and honest, or we're claiming to be so anyway. And that's why it's important to be very careful when I say I'm going to do something. It doesn't matter what it is. You be very careful with that. Be careful that you don't say something when you have no intention of doing it in the first place. That carries with it the idea of hypocrisy. In James chapter 5 and in verse 12, James says, "Above all, my brethren, do not swear either by heaven or by earth or with any other oath, but let your yes be yes and your no be no, lest you fall into judgment." The idea of condemnation because you didn't do what you said you were going to do. But then you swore by heaven or by earth or some other means that you have no control over. Sometimes you may have every intention of doing something, but things don't work out. You have to be very careful. In 1 Timothy chapter 5 and in verse 13, Paul, when he's writing about widows who are widows indeed, he talks about these ladies. He says, "Besides, they learn to be idle, wandering about from house to house, and not only idle, but also gossips and busybodies, saying things which they ought not. Therefore, I desire that the younger widows marry, bear children, manage the house, and give no opportunity to the adversary to speak reproachfully." He's referring to young widows here as compared to who are widows indeed. But notice one of the things that he condemns here is gossips and busybodies. Gossip is a very dangerous concept, and really we could preach an entire lesson on just gossip alone. But in essence, gossip is speaking about another person to someone else that isn't intended to be, "Hey, please pray for this person because," you know, and it may be something generic. There may be no need to go into detail as to whatever this issue is, but please pray for this person. That's not what the goal is in gossip. Gossip is to talk about someone else with the intention either of just kind of being able to talk about how much better we are than that person, or to talk about, "Oh, did you hear about this situation and how so-and-so and so-and-so and blah, 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 blah," with just the idea of just kind of being able to kind of shoot the breeze, as we say. Just to have something to talk about. That's gossip. Something other than the purpose of benefiting the individual who you're talking about. And I have a buddy of mine who's a preacher out in Arkansas. Went to Florida College with him, and one of his big things is, in fact, maybe even to a degree that one time he wouldn't even give me directions to the person's house. You need to call that person and ask them, because I don't know if I'm supposed to share directions or not. But one of the things he said was, and I really appreciate it, I think it's a great rule to live by, is if you're saying something to someone else that if that person were there would be embarrassed or would be upset that you shared it, that's gossip. And I think that's a great rule of thumb to go by. Especially as a preacher, for me, that's a great rule to go by. If I'm not told specifically that I can share certain information with others, then I don't. Because certain information may come my way that I'm privy to that others don't, maybe they don't want the others to know about it. And so it's important to be aware of ourselves. If we're talking about someone who isn't in our presence, imagine that person, if they were there, how they would react to what we're saying. And if we're saying it as, "Please pray for this person, they're struggling," then they probably would most likely be, "Oh yeah, thank you, I appreciate you saying that. And maybe not specifics, but generic, I need prayers, that's great." But gossip is a danger as well. Then we come into profanity. A lot of times profanity is defined by four-letter words that are generally by our society viewed as being not polite, inappropriate, and profane. But here's what the definition of profanity is. It is the deliberate misuse or misapplication of a word or phrase, not phase, phrase. There should be an R in there. To take a word, what might be what we call a curse word or profanity today, may not be in 100 years, but another four-letter word might be. What's interesting and what's important for us to remember is that when we take a word or a phrase and we make it do something or mean something that is not what it's intended to be, that's profanity. But then when you add to it the emotion that goes with, as we noticed back in Leviticus 24, the cursing or the taking God's name in vain, that's what adds the vehemence to cursing or profanity. And it's important for us to understand, when we talk about the idea of profanity, we're going to talk about euphemism in just a minute, the proper practice of someone who claims to be a Christian is to have their words, their tongue seasoned with salt, which means that the things that we say should have a preserving nature on others. They should have a preserving influence, not one that brings about anger, not one that has another thinking, is that person really a Christian? They claim to go to church, but they talk like a sailor. You know, which, that phrase, talking like a sailor, really doesn't have as much meaning as it did 50 years ago. But the idea behind it is just profanity, every other word or every other sentence. And that's not the way the Christian is supposed to act. But more so, not how a Christian is supposed to think. And that's, as we go back to what Jesus says, yeah, there are certain things that are sins, but where do they come from? They come from evil thoughts. That's where it begins. That's where it starts. And so I need to be able to control my mind first before I even think about being able to control my tongue. Because if we're constantly thinking in profanity, or we're thinking in taking God's name in vain, or we're thinking about things that are vulgar, guess what? One way or another, one day, something's going to slip out. You're going to say something in the midst of... One time I was working as an electrician, ironically, in Florida. And you can ask Elizabeth. I have a habit of hurting myself on the job routinely. But one time we were doing some work in this house, and I had a hammer, and I was hammering, and I hit my thumb. Like, I hit it square, too. I completely missed the nail. It wasn't a graze. It was right on the thumb. I dropped the hammer. I go, ow! And I'm shaking it like this, and my boss was standing right there, and they're not Christians. He just looks at me. He says, that's it? I'm like, yeah, it hurts. He's like, no, that's it. He said, I'll be jumping around, cussing, throwing stuff. And I've always thought about that as being the difference between someone who's trying to control themselves, thinking through what they're doing, versus someone who doesn't care. The idea of a Christian thinking about what they're going to show in their reactions to things, in their emotion. Did I hurt? Yes. Was I angry at the nail? No. Was I angry at the hammer? No. I was upset at myself. But there was no vehemence, there was no anger there. It was just an onomatopoeia. Ow! I can't curse with an onomatopoeia. Ow! Ooh! Ouch! That's all onomatopoeia is. But when I start taking words, and it could be any word, okay? It doesn't have to be one of the recognized four-letter words that people of our society view as profanity. It can be any word. If I take it and I start using it in a way that is meant to represent something that is inappropriate, meant to represent condemnation, it becomes profanity. Especially if when I use it with anger. That's where euphemisms come in. Because euphemism, it focuses on the word more than it does the character of the person using it. Which is to say, instead of using this curse word, we're going to say this other word that basically means the same thing, but it just sounds better. It's a substitution of an offensive word for something that is maybe a little bit less offensive. That's what a euphemism is. But the problem here, and what we have to be very careful with, I remember when we were going to, when I was going to Florida College, one of the things that was going around at that time was, oh, snap. Oh, snap. Well, snap, it, you know, you don't think much about it. But let me tell you, hearing that for a while, it sounded so bad, especially when people were saying it when they were angry, people when they were saying it when they were frustrated. And I began to look at it as no different than substitute any other four-letter word there. It was literally four letters. The idea became that it's a euphemism, but in terms of the character of the one as they were saying it, it had no, if you compare someone of the world and what they would say if they would say, oh, in a four-letter word, that's profanity, versus this Christian who's doing the same thing and inserting snap in there, but the emotions are exactly the same. There's anger, there's frustration, there's irritations, there's vehemence involved. That means that that euphemism is no better than what people of the world would consider profanity. And we have to be very, very careful, brethren, because in our efforts to try not to say bad words, and instead we insert other words that are don't sound as bad, if we use them in the same way, it's no different. That is the very definition of profanity. We are using a word outside of its definition for the express purpose of expressing an emotion that really we shouldn't be expressing at all. The motivation behind this, yeah, it could be expression of anger, vehemence. Sometimes it's a desire to feel like a fit in with other people. Because everybody else talks this way, says these types of things, I feel like I need to as well. And perhaps one reason why we should never allow our conduct to be changed, in addition to a lot of other reasons, one primary reason why we should never allow ourselves to change how we do or what we do from what God says is because I want to fit in with other people. Brethren, we're supposed to stand out. That's part of the reason why our lives would be a light shining in the darkness. We're supposed to be set on a hill that can't be hidden. We're supposed to be a candle in a room, not under a bushel or a basket. Doing something to fit in is a terrible reason to change why we do what we do. We need to be mindful of our emotions. Just as Rodney read in Ephesians 4:29, let no corrupt word proceed out of your mouth, but what is good for necessary edification, that it may impart grace to the hearers, both Christians, and I would apply that to non-Christians as well. We don't want to say things that are specifically designed to discourage somebody. Designed for necessary edification. Edification can be encouraging and discouraging based on how it's applied. But edification on its own for the purpose of helping someone, that's what edification is. Verse 31, let all bitterness, wrath, anger, clamor, and evil speaking be put away from you. Notice what Paul starts with. Bitterness, wrath, anger. Then comes evil speaking. Why? Because the source of evil speaking is bitterness, wrath, anger. Verse 32, be kind to one another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another. Colossians 4 and in verse 5, let walk in wisdom toward those who are outside, talking about those who aren't Christians, redeeming the time. Let your speech always be with grace, seasoned with salt, that you may know how you ought to answer each one. Titus chapter 2 and in verse 7, as Paul tells Titus that in all things he is to show himself to be a pattern of good works. In doctrine, showing integrity, reverence, incorruptibility, sound speech that cannot be condemned, that one who is an opponent may be ashamed, having nothing evil to say of you. In James chapter 2 and in verse 12, James says, so speak and so do as those who will be judged by the law of liberty. In James chapter 1 and in verse 19, so then, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath, for the wrath of man does not produce the righteousness of God. All of those passages describe the character of the Christian first, and then what is to come from that character. Imagine if you were to think, as you're walking around, going to school, going to work, talking to your friends, talking to your neighbors, so forth, loved ones, if Jesus were standing right there in a party, it's just you and your friend, if Jesus was the third person in that group, would my dialogue, the things that I say and how I say them, would it change if Jesus were with me? If I'm in with a group of people from work and we're going to eat lunch together during our break, would the things I talk about, would the jokes I laugh at, would the jokes I tell change if Jesus were sitting there with me, sharing the meal together? Because the important thing to realize is that Jesus is with me. There is nowhere I can go, nowhere I can hide, ask Jonah, where God and Jesus, they're not aware of what I'm doing. God is always watching. God is always there. God always is listening. I heard a lesson one time, and I use this example a lot as well. Imagine if we get to judgment, and in addition to all of our deeds, Jesus, as he's sitting on the judgment seat, has a tape recorder. And he starts playing back every word, every piece of dialogue, every joke back to us. Of our entire life, would it serve the purpose of justifying us, or would it serve the purpose of condemning us? When we first started, we talked about the example of someone who claims to be a Christian, but they weren't living according to that example. Now imagine the example of a Christian who holds fast to what God calls him to be. An individual who has the control of their mind first. They're very careful with what they say because they're careful of what they think. They're mindful of their emotions, and when they have anger, when they have frustration, they're very, very aware and are thinking about what they say and how they say it so as to not saying something that is inappropriate or condemning to them. This is an individual who will succeed in other areas of his spiritual life as well. Because perhaps one of the hardest things for Christians to do is to control our thoughts. But if we can learn to do that, if we can learn to discipline ourselves enough that we are aware of every word that comes out of our mouth, whether it's appropriate, and making sure that we filter anything inappropriate, then we're able, as James says, if any man can tame his tongue, he can control any part of himself. Let's let that be our goal. Brethren, going forward, let's make sure that we're doing the best we can to set the best example for those around us, but also to make sure our words have grace, seasoned with salt, to be edifying to others, both our brethren and those who hear us. That's a lesson for you this morning, something I hope that is beneficial and edifying for us, something that is educating and also reminding. I'm sure this is something that everybody's already heard before, but it's a reminder that we need to make sure that we are aware of what we're doing, what we're thinking, and what we're saying. We offer an invitation this morning to those who are not Christians to become a Christian, to allow yourself to be taught how to control yourself, to be taught what it means to be a Christian, what God calls on the Christian to be, and how you can be saved as a Christian. We offer an invitation to those who are Christians. You need help, if you need encouragement, you need someone to pray with you, we're here for you. The invitation is extended. If you're subject, please come forward as we stand and sing.